From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody, Rob Cairns here. I'm here with my friend Madeline Weiss today, and Madeline and I are going to talk about her new book, Getting to Great, A Five-Step Strategy for Work and Life. This was a really interesting, engaging conversation we had, so please sit back, relax, and enjoy this podcast. Hey everybody, Rob Cairns here. I'm here with Madeline Weiss, and we're going to talk about her latest book called Getting to Great. How are you today, Madeline?
I'm wonderful, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me, and hi to all of your listeners.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, and it's a pleasure to be talking about a self-development book, because that's, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I consider this to be a little bit. And I'm a little bit of a take care of yourself junkie, so that kind of helps. So I wanted you to start off and tell a little bit about yourself, your story, and why did you write the book?
Yeah, so, you know the book, the kids book, Madeline?
Yes.
To the tiger in the zoo, Madeline just said poo-poo.
Yes.
That's my avatar.
Okay.
So I was like that. I still am a little bit. So here's where it gets sad for the moment. I'm just preparing you. When I was 15 years old, my father died suddenly of a stroke.
Wow.
And I, because I was such a mouthy little kid, was punished for most of my childhood. I was grounded. So when he died, I did what kids do. They sort of make everything their fault. And I went for a number of years, I think into my early adulthood, thinking that he died of me, until one day at the cemetery, when I broke down with my mother, finally, because, you know, back in those days, people didn't talk to their children and listen to their children like they do now, which is why this took years. And I told her how bad I felt about how all my fault it was. And she said, in her shining moment as a mom, "No, honey, it wasn't you. It was work." So no surprise, I help hard-driven high achievers master their minds so they can find more hours in the day, more peace of mind, more energy, more freedom and fulfillment, to be able to maintain and enjoy satisfaction and success in all areas of their lives without burning out or worse, like my dad.
Yeah. And I think the key in that was in their minds. And I really believe that. I always say in life, I have a phrase I use with people, and that is 90% is in the brain and 10% is the execution of doing what's in the brain.
Yeah. You know, because of the book, when I was in business school, the one course, so I graduated with like a 3.97 out of 4. Yes. What brought it down was marketing.
Oh, God.
I could barely sit in the marketing course. That's how I struggle with the whole concept, because I'm so like authentic and all of that. So, but because of this book, I really felt that to do justice to my baby book, that I should learn something about how to market it, because I can't be the only person on the planet who knows that I wrote that. So in the course of taking, to your point, this is where I'm going. In the course of taking these courses, I met some of the very highest powered marketing gurus in the States. And they said, they say 80% is mindset. And then they add, and if we're really going to be honest, it's 100%.
Yep.
It's all mindset.
I would agree. It's funny when you talk about marketing, not to derail the conversation a bit, but
when I
was a college student, so we'll go back 35 odd years ago, and I had a marketing professor in my first year that would walk in, sit on the desk and say, I'm only here to get my summers off. I don't care about the students. I'll grade your papers and it's all in the textbook. So I looked there and said, Miss Kim, and she said, what? I said, could you give me a list of the exam dates? And I promise you will only see me on those exam dates, because if it's all in the book, I don't need you. And I swore, I should tell you, I got an A. I swore I would never work in marketing or like marketing again. And what have I done for the last 12 years?
I was going to say, isn't that what you do?
Yes, exactly. Because I'm doing it on my terms of something I love to do. Instead of somebody who was there and should not have been doing that because she could have cared less.
Well, how did you make friends with it? What did you learn to appreciate that you could implement in a way that was nourishing to you and others?
Yeah, I basically learned that I was going to overcome her attitude and get my A. I mean, I was on the dean's list. I was a 4.0 grade point average for 3 years. So I was on the dean's list.
Yeah.
And I made a decision then and there. I wasn't going to let her drag my average down. And I knew if it was all in the book, I would be fine because of the way I studied. So I just said, oh, this is great, because I just freed up 4 hours a week.
So do you think that there's any connection between the reason that you mastered the marketing and the fact that that's your work?
I only got into marketing like full time like 12 years ago. I was in technical support for 20 years before that. So no, then it's just something I like doing a lot. And another example of that is photography. Like about marketing, I like to challenge. I like making businesses succeed. I like helping people.
Yeah.
My mantra at work always is, a good day at work is how many people I've served and helped get their job done, because that's my job. So that's always been my mantra, is how many people can I help and better their life?
Well, that is the secret, by the way, as far as I have learned it, to making friends with marketing and being a someone like me. You know, I was trained initially as a classically trained psychotherapist. Yes. And there was no part of my training that had, not only was there no part of my training that had anything to do with marketing, but as a matter of fact, you had that schooled out of you. You didn't promote yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There was an indignity to all of that. So I really had to overcome a lot to be able to make sure that I did justice to this book.
Yeah, it's hard as a psychotherapist. I think I told you when we did our pre-talk, I worked for a psychotherapist for 2 years, 3 days a week, and I set up all his digital marketing.
Oh.
And he actually decided to let his psychotherapy license go in Ontario and call himself a business coach, because the industry, if you call yourself a psychotherapist, so regulated by the College of Psychotherapy. Yeah. And one of the things they don't like is their psychotherapists doing online training, believe it or not.
Online training, wow.
Yeah, they're against it. So he let it go and called himself a business coach and said goodbye. And this was...
clients who have wanted to put testimonials for me online.
Yeah.
And I called my licensing board and they said to me, not only can you not ask them ever to do that, but if someone tells you they want to do that, you have to recommend against it.
Yeah.
So that is like so different from it's the 180 degrees different from what you learn when you take a marketing course. So,
oh, no question. When you take a marketing course, the first thing they teach you is ask everybody to sing your praises and talk about you. And
I put yesterday was everything. Yesterday was the International Day of Women. Mm-hmm. And it was also, my book was on a 99-cent Kindle sale for the next few days. And March is Optimism Month and Spiritual Wellness Month. And March is also, March 20th is the International Day of Happiness. Plus, it was my birthday.
Yeah, more importantly. Yes.
Everything. So I put this thing, I was going to do a live on Facebook. I was going to force myself to do that finally.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. I chickened out. But I put a note on there thanking all the people on Facebook who have supported this baby book in me, and just thank them for putting up with me.
Yeah. It's a journey.
What?
It's a journey. It's a long journey.
Everybody's been so wonderful. It's like, oh my God, I can't stand myself. How can you stand me? Yeah. But they've all been like, they've been wonderful. And the thing that helps is, and I hope some of your readers know this for themselves someday soon, I think it's a good book. So I think there's a lot of good I'm a brain science junkie. I love to read science. I actually started my career in a clinical chemistry lab, worked for the USDA Biological Control Lab and cardiac catheter research. So I have it's been tested twice, an equally balanced right brain and left brain. So this little friendly book is brimming with science. So I think there's something for everybody there, or at least I tried to craft it that way.
That's really amazing. One of the things I always say, and I'd like to get your take on, talked a little bit about you writing the book, is if you want to make life great and you want to make you great and you want to get to great, don't you have to love yourself first?
I think you have to get out of your way.
Okay.
First. So let me tell you, you like to think deep, right?
All the time.
I do too. So I'm going to submit this to you and you can tell me what you think. I don't know whether you're familiar with Ernest Becker's Denial of Death.
Heard about it. I haven't read it.
You might actually like that. It's an old book and he won a Pulitzer, I think, for it or whatever. But he says that the world is divided up into two kinds of people. You know, the premise is that we're all spending our whole entire lives trying to ward off the one thing that is certain to occur. We're going to die. And there are people, and this is a lot of alpha leadership kinds of people, who are wired more than others to fight that. And then there are all the other people who are wired more than others to attach themselves to that kind of power. So when you consider that there are 7.8 billion people in the world, the two things together. One, that if you feel like a little speck in the universe and you don't count for much, you're kind of right about that.
Yeah.
And then once you absorb that, the next thing is, and pretty soon you're not even going to be here. And there was a time when you weren't here. And there'll be another one when you're not here. And while you are here, you're one of 8 billion people. So why do we wonder? Why do we think it's illness? Why do we wonder that people feel vulnerable? Why, how brain dead do you have to be to not feel vulnerable? We never know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yep.
We never know what the next pandemic is coming down the pike.
No, it's true.
We're very small. We're very vulnerable. And I believe that those who I was talking about making friends with marketing, those who can make friends with that and then live a robust, joyful life anyway. But I think first we have to come to terms with our vulnerability. And maybe you're saying you have to love yourself. I'm thinking more in terms of we have to appreciate who we are and who we're not. So all kinds of energy doesn't go into trying to make ourselves someone that we're not, and then making ourselves and everyone else miserable in the process.
Yeah. And I'll take that one step further, and I'll say accept others for who they are and who they're not as well.
Which becomes much easier when, you know, like charity begins at home.
Yeah.
Much easier when we're caring for ourselves like that.
Yeah. I mean, and I understand that. I mean, I've gone through phases where I find in my life, I take care of other people first. And I've kind of gone a whole circle in the last probably 4 or 5 years and said, I need to take care of me more. And by doing that, then I can do the things with other people I want to do. And I think that's part of it. You have to take care of yourself first.
Well, probably I'm going to speculate that some of the things that you were doing that looked to you like taking care of someone else were driven, maybe not consciously, as a way of taking care of you.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
And then the transformation becomes, how can you take care of you more simply and directly than having to go the long way in a way that doesn't usually bear the fruit that you want?
That's true. I would agree. I would agree wholeheartedly. So let's move on before we get into the book. One of the things I've discovered a lot in the last year is the art of meditation.
Uh-huh.
I was never, I should say, a big fan. And I had tried it in past and just couldn't get my head wrapped around it. And I was telling my therapist on Monday night, she said to me, how's that been going? And I said, you know, I've only missed one day since September the 1st. The way I have done that, and there's different things for different people. The number one meditation app on the net is called Calm, C-A-L-M. And it's not cheap. It's $80 US a year. And being a Canadian, add 30% to that.
Okay.
That's about what the dollar conversion is today, give or take. And as far as I'm concerned, it's the best $110 I spent all last year.
It's great.
And they have different things for different people. So if you want to meditate to bird sounds, you can do that. If you want to meditate to ocean sounds, you can do that. I do twice a day. When I get up, it starts my day. When I go to bed, it ends my day.
How long do you do it each time?
When I get up, 15 minutes. When I end my day, 35 to 40.
That's great. I want your listeners to know that on my website for free, and I want you to know, there's a box. After you scroll down past the part where I'm carrying on about my book.
Down at the bottom. Yep.
It's in the middle-ish. It's right under that. You'll see this box that's the complimentary pull down. And there's something called the breathing. There are lots of exercises on there, but there's one called the breathing room, which is a meditation that people can have. And there's something else on there that is really powerful. And I've called it power breathing. It takes under 30 seconds and you can use it anywhere, anytime. And one of my clients, I don't know if I told you this, I might have, he had a very racing mind. Everything was pretty good in his life, but he was tormented by this racing, this thinking all the time. And So I did this exercise with him, this under 30 second exercise with him. And when he was finished, he said, wow, it was like a psychedelic drug or something. He just had this immediate calm.
Yeah.
It's not just for the calm. And I want to make a big deal about that, because people worry that when they're calm, they won't be as smart. Mm-hmm. They won't have as much energy. They won't be as focused, and they won't perform as well.
But I don't agree.
Right. So you can tell your audience why you don't agree.
I've been through that state.
Yeah.
I've been through the state where I wasn't as calm, where I got agitated by things that shouldn't have bothered me. I got angry over things that I shouldn't have got angry for.
And exhausted.
And I think the anger was more to kind of take control of the situation more than anything else, but going about the wrong way. And then I decided one day I don't want to do that anymore, and I let it all go.
So do you feel smarter?
No, I'm as smart as I've always been.
So theoretically, so there's something, can anybody see us?
This is audio only.
Okay, because I was going to show you the hand model of the brain.
Yeah.
So if you make a fist, your wrist area is the lower brain. And if you make a fist, you have your thumb in the middle.
Yeah.
And the thumb is where all that agitation is. Mm-hmm. And when that thumb is going berserk, it throws the higher cortex offline.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yep.
Right. And so when that happens, you're not doing your best thinking. And in the simplest terms, you're not as smart as you could be, because the executive functioning is absent. It's out of the room. It's offline. Yep. So that fear that if people are calm, they'll be dull, isn't right, because the calming of that emotional center allows the executive functioning brain to be back integrated into the system. So the agitated part of you can say to your executive functioning brain, I don't like what's happening here. It doesn't feel good and I'm worried. Can you help? And the higher functioning brain can say, I got this. Yeah. Thank you for letting me know. I'll take care of this. So that's where this power breathing, if anybody wants to pull that off the website, that's where the power of breathing just puts the whole, it's like Humpty Dumpty, it just puts the whole brain back together again so that it can function optimally.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. The other two things I do, and I'll share this before we get to book because I think it's value. One, I journal every day. And I've journaled every day for 27 years. So, and I don't journal for my partner. I don't journal for my kid. I don't journal for my friends. Because if you read my journals and people would read them someday, they'd say, did you really say that? I journal for me. And, you know, I'll use language I would never use often in person. I will say that. I'll admit that. But I'm not writing to make somebody happy. I'm writing as an outlet.
You have some very good habits.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was one I picked up in a productivity course many, many years ago I took. And I just, and they said, try journaling. And then the third thing, and we're talking about this before we went to air, I walk every day. Rain or shine, snow or whatever. And I started walking, this is going back about 6 years ago. I was in what I consider a really bad relationship. I'm separated now, but a different reason, different time. And I really didn't like going home. So I used to walk to clear my head before I went home.
Yeah.
And that walking started at about 15 minutes a day. It finally turned into an hour and a half a day. And by doing that, I lost 120 pounds.
Yeah, that's amazing.
My head was 10 times better because I had time to think. I used to walk without music, just me. And I also worked myself down in weight, so I came off all diabetic medication I was on. And that's amazing when you consider I'm 53 this year, 54 in the fall. At 41, I spent my 41st birthday in the ICU in a hospital in Toronto because of a diabetic attack.
Oh my God.
So, yeah.
You know, not everything, like say journaling.
Yeah.
That might be somebody's cup of tea and not someone else's cup of tea. But the fact that you've put together this constellation of things that are helpful for you, the things that work for you, is really impressive.
It takes time and it takes effort. And it's funny, we go back to journaling for a sec. My journal's beside me. And I'll pick it up in the middle of a workday and say, geez, I should write that down. And I'll put stuff in it, like today was a busy day. So I said at lunchtime, I wrote down, said, this is looking to be a busy day. There's stuff coming out of nowhere, and it's going to be one of those weeks. I had no problem putting it down. And I was sharing this actually with my director the other day. I said, she was asking me how I seem to keep so level keel. And I said, well, part of it's being organized. I'm a bit of an organizational junkie, so I'm anally organized. And that drives a lot of people nuts. I'm a Virgo, if you believe in astrology, and Virgos are known for being organized. So if you believe or don't believe. But I was sharing with her and I said, Jane, I journal every day. And she said, does that help? And I said, yeah. And then some days I'll write 5 lines. And Sunday I wrote 4 pages. It all depends on what my mood is. And it depends who I've crossed paths with, who I've talked to, what I've done, what I'm feeling. The journal is a good way to put emotions down. So I'll say, oh, today was a tough day. This was an easy day.
Well, there's something about writing that kicks things up to the left brain.
Yeah.
Takes some of the sting out of the emotion.
Yeah.
So
that kind of helps. And I think what people need to do is recognize not every strategy works for them.
Exactly.
Find the ones that do.
Exactly.
Don't criticize your friends because right. found something else, because we're all different. And that's why there's 50 million books out there. There's 50 million techniques out there. I'm not saying millions, but you get what I'm saying. And people got to realize, even in time management, you know, away from this, managing your time. I manage my time very differently than many people. But because I do, and it works for me, and I've done it that way for years, my days are better than most people's days.
I have a chapter in Getting to Great that the title of the chapter is The Tyranny of Time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a minute.
So time, and we forget this now, time is something that we made up to serve us, to track the flooding of the Nile for agricultural reasons. We track the sun, the moon, the stars, again, to help us to survive and to thrive. And we forget that we were the master and time was the slave. And somehow the forgetting has turned, it has flipped it, that somehow we think time is like a god. Time reigns over us and we bow to it, and it's backward. Because we made it up in the first place.
That's true.
Time is a figment of human imagination. And it has so much power over us because we forgot what it was there for.
Yeah.
We forgot, most of all, that we put it there.
Yeah.
We put that there. We made that up.
Yeah. It's all people's perception. Another phrase I go by is, a lot of friends and people I know live to work. And I say, really? And I say, maybe that's why you're miserable. And they say, what do you mean? I said, I like to work to live. There's a big difference.
Well, actually, let's not be judgy, because I love my work.
So do I.
And it does bring me so much, you know, I hate to use the buzzwords, but oh well, meaning and purpose. I feel like, especially like what happened with my father, for example, I feel like if I can help one little boy or girl's mommy or daddy or anybody at all for that matter.
Yeah, you've done your job.
Have a happier, healthier, more prosperous and productive life. I'm doing what I'm here to do.
Yep.
So do I live to work? Kind of.
Yeah.
I kind of do.
My best friend out of my marriage is 62 years old.
Yeah.
She's a school teacher. She teaches grade 7. Tough times right now with COVID going on. I'll tell you that.
Grade 7's a tough time anyway.
Tough anyway. Hormones are changing. Kids are changing. Bodies are changing.
In the middle school, it's terrible.
Yeah. And she's in a middle school. We still have some middle schools in the Toronto area. Mm-hmm. And one of the things her and I talk about is a lot is what makes a successful year. And she always says, if I've made a difference to one kid, I've taught.
Yeah.
One kid. Yeah. And she's got...
I've heard that a lot from teachers. And I know what that feels like.
And she's got a student who's now, I think Ashley's 29, so ex-student. And Ashley's mom died of cancer.
Mm,
and my friend Leslie's mom died of cancer. And Leslie talked to her a lot when she was going through it. And she's out in Vancouver in the film business. And she still stays in touch because Leslie made a difference to her life. And those are the days that matter.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the book for a sec. On the sales page on Amazon, there's a really good quote, and I want to read it. And I think I know which one I'm going to read. A great life depends on a great fit between who we are, the environment we work, and I've lost it. Sorry.
Live.
And live. How do you feel about that?
That's the first line of the book.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly about that. I feel like that's the whole ball of wax. That's the whole thing. And it always was the whole thing. So I'm an evolutionary psychology junkie.
Mm-hmm.
So I've read a lot of that for years. And you don't even have to do that to know about Darwin and survival of the fittest and adaptation, and the world belongs to those who adapt and adapt or die and all of that. And that's as true today as it ever was, that those who get to great in their lives are in really good alignment with who they are.
Yep.
And the environments in which they work and live. And I know, like, to my bones what that feels like.
Yeah.
So when people come to me, typically they don't. They're typically out of alignment and miserable. And that's why they come to me. And I hold that space until they can step into it like it's a hologram for them. Yeah. Because everyone can have that.
Yeah, I would agree. And then brings me to an interesting topic that's kind of going to stir up some controversy. In the productivity space, not your space, people like to talk about work-life balance.
Yeah, I don't like that word.
I don't either. I knew you weren't going to like that word. And I always say there's no such thing.
Yeah, well, I don't like what it implies.
Okay.
I think that right off the top, it implies equal parts.
Yes.
And that's not how it works.
No, I know.
So sometimes in your life, when you're very focused on one part of your life to the exclusion of another part of your life, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're out of alignment.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something funny. So in one of these marketing courses, somebody else, somebody like me, was talking with the marketing guru about how to package his program. And he said, I'm having trouble with that word, you know, the work-life balance. I'm having trouble with the word balance. So I put in the chat room, and this isn't even the word that I use in the book. The word that I use in Getting to Great is work-life quality.
Yes.
But for some reason, I put integration in the chat room. And the other person like me said, Madeline just said integration. What do you think of that? And he, the guy said, he's really highly educated, more than most people, just say balance. And I just broke out laughing. And then they put in the chat room, she's laughing. It was hysterical. But yeah. So a lot of people are struggling with the word balance. I've actually read articles slamming the word balance. So I don't think a lot of us really even like that.
I don't. I certainly don't, because things shift depending on what priorities are. And
they should.
And they should. Like, for example, a day like today for me was a heavy work day. I guarantee you Saturday will be a heavy personal day. That's just the way it is.
So what do you think about quality? Does that
work? I think quality of life matters. I think that's a better word. I think it matters more than people realize.
This table of contents, let's see. Make sure I called it right. Work-life quality, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a better word.
Thank you.
I really do. So we talked about work-life balance. And in the book, what is the number one message you want somebody to get from reading it?
The first line.
Okay.
Great life depends on a great fit between who we are and the environments in which we work and live. A lot of times when I'm being interviewed, people will say, like what you just said, and I have a different answer that I'm going to share with you. There's something called good company.
Okay.
And I told you I study Advaita Vedanta, pre-Hindu tradition, believe it or not, for over 20 years and still do. And that's where that concept comes to me from. Okay. And good company is not just the people you hang out with, but the books you read, the wine you drink, the food you eat, the music that you listen to. Listen to this. This is really important. The thoughts in your head.
Yes.
Good company. And then, of course, the people your life with. And we do have some choice over that. And so the finest quality of all of these things that we can find and afford. And I believe that if we create that kind of life, we really enhance our own happiness, which helps us to bring more goodness to the world.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing. At the end of the day, it's what you can bring to the world.
Right.
I really believe that.
Yes.
That's so well said.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, to get to that greatness, can you give the listeners two quick tips? And well, I know everybody's different.
Well, except, so the reason that I wrote this book, I said to myself one day, all these people I'm working with are so different, and my toolkit has so much different stuff in it.
Yeah.
What the heck is actually happening here that's putting a smile on their faces?
Yeah.
And I was looking for common denominator. So even though we're all different, and they are all different, what is it that they had in common that got them to this much better place?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was the five steps. I put it into five steps, and I was really happy when I saw that it worked into the acronym GREAT.
Good.
That made me really happy. And so there are five tips, and they relate to that sentence that you and I like, that a great life depends on a great fit. So the G is for grounding. Number one, first of all, you have to believe. And again, people don't come to me believing, but in due time they do, that it's not about just getting relief from your pain. You can actually build a great life so that you don't have to fight this pain so much all the time. So it's grounding in that belief. The R is for recognize, if a great life depends on the fit between who you are and the environment, you need to know who you are.
Okay.
So there's that part of the process. And once that is better understood, then the E is for going exploring. And all of my clients start dreaming away things they never thought of, or things they thought of but said, nah, I can't do that. And that's fun, but that's not enough.
Yeah.
Because William James said that action doesn't guarantee happiness, but there's no happiness without it. Yes. So they have to really start experimenting with some of that. And then they'll get to this better place. And human beings, there's a book called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. Do you know that?
I know the book. I haven't read it.
Okay. Yeah. So the concept there is that there's an upper limit. All of us can only be so happy and so successful without the resistance to start looming. And so the T is for tackling the resistance. So that's a process that everyone and anyone and all of my clients I've observed go through.
Yeah. And it's an important process. And I think one that everybody should go through, frankly.
Well, if they want to up level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think most people do. And they got to think up leveling, like staying within the box, I don't think gets you anywhere, personally.
Well, I always like to say it this way. The tree wants to grow and the bird wants to fly. And so.
Yeah. So what I would suggest to anybody listening is get out to Amazon, get Madeline's book, read it. It's probably going to be one of those books that you're going to want to read a couple times, I would think.
Somebody said that, actually. One of the people who reviewed the book said, and then I wrote to her. She's an author, who I know. I said, are you really reading that twice? She said, absolutely.
Yeah. Read it once. And then the way I like to read books like this is I go back through the second time and I take notes when I read the second time. So go read it. Madeline brings a lot to the table. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, share your website, share the best way to get you.
MadelineWeiss.com. MadelineWeiss.com. All of my social media links are right on there. There's a link if you want to buy the book from there.
Yeah.
Again, it's the Kindle version is 99 cents right now for the next day or two. And I would love to hear from you.
Yeah, get the book, drop Madeline a line. I'm sure she'll love to hear from you.
I will.
And thank you for spending some time today and going through your journey and the book.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And have a great night, everybody. And as I said, go get the book because you'll be glad you did. Bye for now.
I want to thank Madeline Weiss for joining me on today's podcast. Go check out her book, Getting to Great, A Five-Step Strategy for Work and Life. I really think this book is a must-read if you want to improve yourself. So go check it out today without delay. Thanks for listening to the STM Show. The show is a production of Stunning Digital Marketing, and all rights are reserved. Rob can be reached by email at VIP@stunningdigitalmarketing.com, on Twitter @RobCairns. on his website, stunningdigitalmarketing.com, and on his website, there's links to all his social media platforms. This show is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed.